This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me. Busy fight week, and we have a great show lined up for you. First up, Sergio Moore, the former junior middleweight champion. He joins me in studio. We take a deep dive on the upcoming Manny Pacquiao-Adrian Broner fight. Pacquiao's 40 years old. How important is this fight for him? Adrian Broner's only 29, but it might be a more important fight for the multi-division champion. Plus, Freddie Roach making his return to Pacquiao's corner. We talk about all that. Later, we talk about Demetrius Andrade, who's got a fight coming up on Friday on DAZN. And Amir Khan, Terrence Crawford is official. How does Amir Khan win that fight? I dive into all that more with Sergio Moore. A little bit later on, Manny Pacquiao himself will join me. I went out to Wildcard Gym in Hollywood, sat down with Manny Pacquiao, talked about everything. His return to working with Freddie Roach, fighting at 40 years old, his financial issues, how big a deal is that, and what he wants from the rest of his career. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me now on the podcast, he is the former junior middleweight world champion. You can catch him regularly on the DAZN broadcast, including this Friday night, where the show headlined by Demetrius Andrade making a middleweight title defense. That'll be at the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden and live on DAZN. He's Sergio Mora. What's up, Sergio?
What's going on, Chris? You like my scarf?
I see.
I knew you were going to bring it up.
I thought about it. So Sergio Mora is Mexican and California-based here. So he doesn't understand New York winters.
Nope.
So in the airport on the way in, he bought his first ever scarf. And I got to tell you, it's not bad for an airport scarf, but it's still an airport scarf. I mean, let's just be honest about that. He got in the lobby.
I'm excited about it.
To take people on the inside, in the lobby of our hotel, he got a compliment from one of the women that work over at DAZN. And his face lit up like he won a world title. Like, wow.
This is my first scarf and I'm proud of it. It's not that good, but this is the job. I'm happy.
And you're wearing it indoors now, so you're a true New Yorker at this point. No, you're good. Don't knock your headphones off. All right, let's jump right into it, Sergio. Busy weekend in boxing, multiple fights Friday and Saturday. But I want to talk about the fight on Saturday. We have the return of Manny Pacquiao, 40 years old, almost 2 years removed, more than that, really, from his last fight in the United States. His last couple of fights, Jeff Horn, he fought in Australia. Lucas Matisse, he fought in Malaysia. He is back stateside fighting in Las Vegas in a significant fight against Adrian Broner. Pacquiao, Sergio, is 40 years old now. If he was an A fighter in 2009, back when he was at the peak of his powers, coming off the win over De La Hoya, beating up Miguel Cotto, having significant win after significant win, including Ricky Hatton, what grade would you give him as a fighter in 2019?
Since you just described it that way, obviously he's not an A fighter anymore, just by age alone and the fact that he lost to Jeff Horn. You can't say he's an A fighter, but he still demands A side money and he's still the A side fighter. And he hasn't been knocked out brutally again. I think he still can compete with A side fighters. Adrian Broner is not an A side fighter, but he's a B plus.
You think Broner's a B plus fighter?
Yes. B plus talent. Yes, he is. I think he's B plus talent.
I found our first argument. Good.
I think he's B plus talent. He can be A minus talent. It just he can't seem to get past that hump. And we'll get that. We'll touch on that later. But back to Pacquiao. Yes, he still can't compete with the A fighters. And I think until someone dominates him and makes him feel his age or knocks him out brutally again, then we can disagree on that.
Okay, I think Pacquiao at this stage of his career is a B fighter. And that's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they're the A fighters in the welterweight division, we know who they are. Terrence Crawford is an A fighter. Errol Spence is an A fighter. Keith Thurman has been an A fighter. But if I look at the past performances, the last two fights, you had Jeff Horn. And I know that A fighter beating B fighter a certain way and C fighter beating B fighter a certain way doesn't always equate. But I watch how Jeff Horn performed against Pacquiao. And even if you think Pacquiao won that fight, it still wasn't all that convincing. I juxtapose that next to how Jeff Horn fought against Terrence Crawford. And Terrence Crawford went in there and beat the daylights out of Jeff Horn. So I compare those two things and I say, well, Crawford's an A fighter. What is Pacquiao after that? I don't look much at the Lucas Matisse fight. I don't like to call fighters washed up, but Lucas Matisse was at the end of his career. Yeah. He was at the end of his career. And he was coming to collect a paycheck, and he did it, and he got knocked out. So the last 2 years, I haven't seen much in the way of significance of Manny Pacquiao. I think he's deservedly a favorite against Adrian Broner, but calling him a B-level fighter at this point I think is fair.
I don't think it's fair, no, because he still demands A-side money.
Well, that's two different things.
Okay, like, well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm a fighter, and I'm going to speak for a fighter. You're a pundit. You're going to speak as a pundit.
You're a pundit too, but okay.
Now I am. Okay, but I'm still somewhat of a fighter. And look, if you're getting that A-side money, then they need to come to you. Pacquiao's still the legend. He's the only legend in all the names that you just talked about. So Terrence Crawford is pound for pound one of the best, if not the best, arguably the best in the world right now. But no one really knows who he is yet around the world. Manny Pacquiao is a legend. He has that Muhammad Ali status going for him. So he still demands that A-side money and that A-side pay-per-view.
Yeah, but this is why I brought you in here, because I want your take. You know fighters, and you've seen Pacquiao fight, and you've seen Crawford fight, you've seen Errol Spence fight. I mean, you can't call Pacquiao on the level of Crawford Spence.
I was about to touch on that, but he's not. He's not at that level anymore. He's not. He doesn't have that Vasily Lomachenko foot speed that he used to have. He doesn't have the Terrence Crawford combinations that he used to have. So he's not the Manny Pacquiao of old, but he's a really good version of a 40-year-old Pacquiao that could still compete. And we're going to find out if he can dominate younger fighters like Adrian Broner, because not for nothing, Adrian Broner, you know, he clowns around and he acts like an idiot outside of boxing, but he's in exciting fights. Even when he loses, he's in an exciting fight. And that's why he keeps being brought back to these big fights and getting paid big money. He's an exciting fighter, and he can test Pacquiao and see where he's at.
I was in the gym with Pacquiao last week, was out at Wild Card to do a couple of things with him. He's still on the pads, looks fast. Freddie Roach told me, and can take it for what it's worth, consider it hyperbole, but he said Pacquiao hit him in the chest protector harder than he's ever been hit before by any fighter. So maybe his power is still there, and we all know that for a fighter, the last thing to go is your power. So that can translate to a 40-year-old. But I watched him spar a little bit, Sergio, and I'm not an expert on sparring. I don't necessarily know what I'm looking at or know what's going through the mind of fighters while they're sparring, but I wasn't all that impressed. I thought he kind of, at best, it was like a stalemate against a couple of sparring partners I saw over six rounds.
How long ago was this?
This was last week.
Okay, well, you can attest that to losing weight, because normally when we start losing weight...
But he's not losing weight. He's only 144.
I was going to bring that up.
I like interrupting
you. He's actually staying or he's staying on weight, or he doesn't have to drop that much weight. Okay, but normally the week of the fight, we're not at our best. We're a little bit dehydrated. We're cutting weight. We're not as strong, and we're not as motivated because we have so many demands. They're pulling us this way for media. They're putting us that way for other things, and then our personal issues and problems. So I really don't take too much on the sparring. Now, if he got his ass whooped in sparring, then yes, we should be very concerned. Or if he got knocked out or knocked down, yes, you should be very concerned. If he looked bad, I wouldn't take it for that much. I'll take it with a grain of sand. But still, he's 40 years old, and the legs start falling apart at that age.
Well, his legs are, you know, his strongest part of his body. His legs still are. Those calves.
Those calves are bigger than your head.
Yes, they are. And I have a big head. So they are significantly bigger. But I'm interested. And you seem like you're giving Broner more than just a puncher's chance. You seemed offended by the predictions that no one is predicting Adrian Broner to win this fight.
No. And including myself, I don't think he wins this fight. But I think he's an exciting fighter. Even when he loses, he's an exciting fight. He's tough as nails. It's not like he gets knocked out and he comes back talking shit again. No, he backs up what he preaches. So He's tough as nails, and against an older legend like Manny Pacquiao, he's motivated. That's another thing. Adrian Broner is motivated. He said this before. He's said it in the past in promotions that this is a different AB and blah, blah, blah. You don't believe him anymore. He's crying wolf. But if he's not motivated for a Manny Pacquiao, he'll never be motivated, and it's a character flaw. But I see a different Adrian Broner, and I think we're going to see the best Adrian Broner against a legend like Pacquiao.
Look, I hope we see the best Adrian Broner. But here's my problem. I'm not sure what the best Adrian Broner is. Every time Adrian Good Broner point. Steps up in competition mm-hmm. to A or A-minus level opponents, he loses. Mm-hmm. Marcos Maidana was the first time he did that. He lost convincingly. Sean Porter, up next, lost convincingly. Mikey Garcia, a guy that theoretically Broner should have some size on, he lost. Jesse Vargas, that was close.
That
I thought he
draw.
Lost that fight.
I thought he lost too.
I thought he
draw.
Lost that fight. The most significant win of Adrian Broner's career is Pauly Malignaggi. I think Pauly will admit in 2013 he was not his A-level self and he wasn't fighting at a weight he was truly
comfortable
at.
And that was a split decision win for Broner.
Yeah, and Pauly was pissed after that fight. He thought he won that fight. I thought Broner pulled it off, but it was a close fight. I think Broner is a charismatic guy, and credit to his matchmakers and the folks at HBO for matching him perfectly early in his career. Those title fights were not against difficult opponents. I'm not sure, Sergio, that Adrian Broner is anything more than a B-level fighter, talent-wise.
Wow, you just convinced me. You just convinced me. That was an argument I can't really say anything against, because look, Adrian Broner does lose against the elite fighters, the best fighters in the division. You named four of the best right there, and he couldn't win. Mm-hmm. But he does win against B plus fighters or B fighters, so that would make him a B plus fighter.
Here's the other, with
A-side talent, because I think he's one of the most talented.
I don't think he does
have talent. He just doesn't work on the right things. I think if he were to work on his feet as much as he does on his hands, he would be an A-side fighter.
I don't think he's as talented as you do. I don't. I think he's got a great chin, and he's got some pop. But Freddie Roach said this recently, not to me, but I was reading some of the quotes, that Broner's more of a 135, 140-pound fighter. That if he was more disciplined, he'd still be fighting at 135, 140 pounds. That this rise up in weight to 147 isn't what normally happens to fighters, and you know this, you just grow into your man strength. Like, that just happens. You gradually come up. Broner, I don't think, has taken his career seriously enough to the point where he should be fighting at 140, or he should be fighting at 135 still. If he was disciplined, he could probably still make those weights and be a more impactful fighter. Pacquiao scares me for Broner, because one thing we know about watching Adrian Broner, when somebody throws a bunch of punches at him, he doesn't punch back, at least not with more than one shot. And what does Pacquiao do? Throws punches and bunches, comes right at you, and throws volume punches at you. I can't envision a scenario, unless Broner catches him on the way in the same way that Juan Manuel Marquez caught Pacquiao on the way in. Otherwise, I can't envision a scenario where Broner racks up enough points to beat Pacquiao by decision.
I didn't say Broner was going to win. I'm with every other pundit. I think it was 100%. They did a Ring magazine, and they asked about 15 to 20 pundits what they think. Not one person gave it to Adrian Broner, and I'm probably the 21st. Mm. I don't think Broner wins.
Yeah.
Then you're 22. Is it going to be worth watching and exciting? Yes, I think it's going to be an exciting fight, because Broner, as you said, he has that pop. He has that speed. We know he's resilient. He can get knocked down and come back and win the round or win the next round. He's just tough. He has that in his blood, and that's not going to change. He has character flaws outside the ring, but inside the ring, we know his character. He's a fighter. You know, he's not only a boxer, but he's a fighter. And he has that determination to try to win the round after he lost. So that's all I'm talking about. He's a testament for a fighter. I'm a fighter. I give him credit for that. Does he have character? Does he have his flaws? Absolutely. Can he beat a 40-year-old Pacquiao? I don't think so. But that's why we're here. We're here to be entertained, and he's an entertaining fighter.
So who is this fight more important for? You've got Pacquiao on one side, 40 years old. You would think it's win or go home for him, though when I talked to him, he said he had no plans on retiring anytime soon. On the other side of the ledger, you've got Broner, who's not even 30 yet, and yet, you know, lost to Garcia, lost to Porter, draw against Jesse Vargas, close fight against Granados. He's not winning these fights, at least not doing it convincingly in the ones that he should. Who is this fight more important for on Saturday?
That's an easy question, Adrian Broner. it's everything on the line for Adrian Broner. I mean, he can get that Manny Pacquiao name on his resume. For Manny, he's proved everything that he had to prove in a great career. I mean, he's a legend, so the legacy's already set for him. Why he's doing it still, that's a question he can answer, but he's still Manny Pacquiao. He still looks the goods. You know, other than that Jeff Horn fight, he's on a winning streak. He's still trying to fight the best fighters out there. He's still very popular. He's Manny Pacquiao. Adrian Broner, like we just said and touched on, he loses the big fights. He doesn't have that one big win that people could say, well, he beat so-and-so. He beats B-plus fighters. He needs that A-plus or A-minus name on his resume. That way he can continue being Adrian Broner. That way you can believe him. You know, when he says, I'm AB, I'm this, I'm about billions. Well, you can actually believe him if he beats a guy like Manny Pacquiao. But when he beats guys like Adrian Granados, you kind of look at him skeptically.
Yeah, I'm with you on Broner. He continues to get high-profile dates against high-profile opponents because his ratings on Showtime have warranted it. He has been propped up by his ratings over the last few years, which continue to be strong despite the fact they don't measure up to his performance in the ring. But if he goes out there and gets blown out by Pacquiao, whether it's a knockout or a lopsided decision, I think that's going to take a major hit on his ability to draw ratings when he comes back on a major network. Not to say that he'd be done after this, but I think you'd see his ratings decline significantly. Let me ask you about Pacquiao. One other thing. Freddie Roach, back in Pacquiao's corner. I did a story about this over at SI.com earlier this week. How significant is that? I mean, Pacquiao's 40. He kind of knows the ropes of how to win a major fight, but Freddie Roach coming back, how big a deal is that for this fight?
It's a huge deal for a fighter. I think every fighter that has been boxing for so long has had a problem with his trainer where he didn't use him for a fight or for a camp, and it didn't go good for the fighter. I know I was part of that. I didn't use my trainer for one fight, and I lost. So it's just that comfort level. You know, he's accomplished everything he had to accomplish.
Tell me about that fight for you. What was the impact of not having your trainer there?
There wasn't security. You don't have that voice in your corner. The main thing is that voice, but you don't have the training camp with that trainer. You don't have that look in his face. When your trainer has been, you know, instructing you in your corner in the gym for 20 plus years or 15 years, whatever it's been, and then all of a sudden someone else gets in the ring and tries to encourage you to do something, that it's not a familiar voice. You don't feel comfortable. It's not like a parent figure. It's not a father figure. It's not someone that you respect. It's someone that it's a substitute. So as a kid, did you respect a substitute teacher? No. You started throwing paper airplanes everywhere and bullshitting. So no, Freddie Roach is that father figure. He's that legend. He's one of the greatest trainers of all time. It's just that security that a fighter needs. You can't replace that security. But every great fighter has been guilty of this, from Muhammad Ali to De La Hoya to Sugar Ray Leonard to Manny Pacquiao. They think they could do it on their own. I don't know if it's financial percentages. I don't know if it's they feel their trainer takes away from their shine. I really don't know why great fighters stray away from their trainers, but it happens over and over and again, and it just doesn't work out for the fighter. So for Pacquiao to have Freddie Roach in his corner is very significant, and it's the difference between a bad performance and a knockout victory. And if he can knock out Broner, and we all know that Roach loves these knockouts and goes for them, then, you know, Manny Pacquiao's back in a significant fight.
Here's the question I have about Roach, and I agree with you that his presence and being back at wildcard and working with an experienced hand like him is important. As we record this, I still don't know who the middle is going to be in this fight. Like, it wasn't decided as of when I was talking to Pacquiao and Roach.
The middle, what do you mean?
In the ring. In, who's going to be the man?
Oh,
the
yeah, that's always a...
and that's an important position, right? Now, I talked to Freddie about this, and Freddie said it didn't matter to him if he was the middle or if Boo Boy Fernandez, who was Pacquiao's assistant trainer, took over the Matisse fight, if he was in the middle. Freddie made a joke about how, you know, for the last 10 years, you know, he would say, you know, Boo Boy would translate it into Pacquiao's native language, what Freddie was saying, to make it a little bit easier for him to understand. And Freddie would say, I would say something like, you know, throw more of the jab. And Boo Boy would talk for like, you know, 35 seconds. And he'd go back and say, I don't think I said all that, Boo Boy. So this the dynamic has been evolved over the years. But my question is, it could become significant if Boo Boy is saying one thing in a tough fight and Freddie is saying another. Now, maybe Manny's smart enough and ring savvy enough to say, you know what, I know what I'm doing out there. I know which information is the right one. But if there are differences of opinion, and we saw this because Freddie Roach talked about it, with the Tyson Fury fight. Freddie came out after the fact and said Ben Davis's game plan was not good. He should have had Tyson be more aggressive because Tyson, he thought, was hurting Deontay Wilder. What happens in a fight like this if there is a difference of opinion in a close fight in the championship rounds?
Like I said earlier, it's a comfort feeling. It's not really what you're listening. It's what you're feeling as a fighter. Because when you're in that 1 minute break in the corner, you're not absorbing every word your trainer's saying. It's basically one or two things that you pick out of two or three sentences. And your fighter, your trainer should know that. A trainer and a fighter know each other. So you try to keep it very basic. That's why Freddie Roach doesn't get too intricate. Oh, you got to keep your elbow in. You got to do that. No.
No,
you got to go jab.
Right.
Yeah. And very basic. Now, Boo Boy, on the other hand, we've seen him. He yells at his fighter. He's very passionate. And he gives a bunch of instructions, which I can't understand because I don't speak Filipino. But I think that's the difference there. So Boo Boy could say all the things he wants. But Pacquiao, like you said, he's been in this so many times. He's so comfortable with both Boo Boy and Roach that he's just going to pick out one or two things that Freddie said. Look at Boo Boy. Boo Boy probably gives him the passion out of him because you're not going to get that passion out of Roach. You know, Roach is very basic. All right, look, this is what you got to do. You got to feint. You got to watch his right hand. Then you come in and we got to go to the knockout, son. It's always a knockout with Roach. Boo Boy's probably telling him other things that we can't understand and just getting that passion out of him. And if you can get a balance of both, every fighter wants that. We want someone that to encourage us, yell at us, whatever it takes, and we just want the basic instructions. I have that in my corner. You know, my trainer, I've been with him 20 years. He's never yelled at me once in the corner, even when I needed to get yelled at. He's basically kept it real mellow and just like, Sergio, this is important. Well, it's a lot different than saying, Sergio, you're blowing it, son. You know, so we're used
you're
to...
You're blowing it!
Yeah, we're used to our trainer in our corner. And Freddie Roach is not going to yell at you, but Boo Boy is. Mm-hmm. Boo Boy is going to get passionate, and Freddie Roach is just going to be Freddie Roach.
All right, before we move on, the expectation is that if Pacquiao wins, there's a high degree of likelihood that we see Pacquiao-Mayweather, the rematch, at some point in 2019. I don't want to delve too deep into this, but what's your level of interest in seeing a rematch between Pacquiao and Mayweather?
Well, let's not dive into it because none. We already seen what happened. And whether it was a shoulder injury or Pacquiao had an excuse about an injury or something else, we don't want to see it because Mayweather's going to do the exact same thing. And if we're talking about Pacquiao being 40 right now, well, Mayweather's 42. So we got two guys in their 40s headlining a pay-per-view that they're probably going to charge $70, $80 for. And we already seen what happened, and it left a bad taste in people's mouth. Why do we want to do that again? Why do we want to do that to ourselves? I mean, it's just not right. It's not fair for other great champions. I mean, Terrence Crawford deserves these A-side pay-per-views. I mean, Mayweather's been there, done that. He has FU money, and he's laughing at us. He throws it in our face every time he can get a chance. So why do we want to keep putting more pocket in this guy's pocket when we already know what he does? He's Picasso in there. He's not going to entertain you. He's not going to try to go for the knockout. Manny Pacquiao, he's just a step behind Mayweather, and we're going to see it again, whether it happens or not, and he's injury-free. He's a step behind, and he will always be a step behind.
Yeah. The only time I want to see those two in the ring is if they're challenging one of the top-tier welterweights. Give me Pacquiao versus the winner of Errol Spence, Mikey Garcia. Give me Mayweather against Keith Thurman or even Sean Porter. You know, Terrence Crawford, of course, I'd love to see that, but a rematch between those two, I would rather.
And there's no way that Mayweather accepts any
not
of those
a chance.
Fights.
So stay retired. Good mm-hmm. luck to you. See you in the Hall of Fame in a few years. This Friday, we'll both be ringside, Madison Square Garden, the theater at Madison Square Garden, to see Demetrius Andre defend his newly won middleweight title against Archer Akhavov. Not a high-profile fight for Demetrius Andre, a stay-busy fight, but for Andre, staying busy is kind of a win. I mean, this was a guy that over the last few years has gone many months, sometimes years, in between his fights. Now, he fights, he wins a belt in October, he comes back in January, he's promised to stay busy all throughout 2019. Let's start with Andrade's pure talent. And this is kind of goes to the question I asked you about Pacquiao and his talent. From a pure talent perspective, where would you rank Andrade among the top middleweights?
Top three. Easily, hands down. I mean, it's Canelo, Golovkin, Andrade at 160. And he's been a top fighter since he was an amateur. He's won every amateur tournament you could think of. He was an Olympian. He's a two-time champion now. And he's beaten everyone they put in front of him. He's undefeated. He's avoided. But the knock on him is that he's not exciting. I can agree to that, but he's a winner, and he can give anyone problems, including the Canelos and the Golovkins and the Charlos of the world. So I think he's top three talent-wise. Now, from a point of a fan or a promoter or markability, then that's a little bit more of a challenge. He's more of a top five, top six middleweight. But skill-wise, as a fighter, you have to respect his talent and his ability, but he needs that significant win, that ooh win, the one that leaves a good taste in people's mouth, you know, the knockout, really. You need that knockout that Andre really, really needs to get this Friday.
Yeah, I think that at the end of 2019, even if he takes these stay busy fights against real middleweights, you might be able to debate whether Andre is the most talented fighter at 160 pounds. The only thing to me that keeps him off that top spot is the fact that he hasn't been a middleweight for very long, and he hasn't fought any significant fight at this point at middleweight. I mean, Walter Kautendakwa, nobody knew who he was. Good puncher. Andre won that lopsided decision. Even this fight against Akhavov, not a known guy. His best or his biggest fight was a loss to Billy Joe Saunders, so I don't think we'll learn too much. But if he goes through this year and wins convincingly by knockout significant fights against consistently ranked top middleweights, we might be able to make an argument at the end of it that he is the number one guy talent-wise in the middleweight division. But you made the point about marketability. So how does Demetrius Andrade get himself in the mix for one of those big-money fights against Canelo, Golovkin, throw Charlo into that equation? How does he get into that mix?
Well, we're going to talk to Andrade in a minute in the fighter meeting, so we can ask him this. But if we ask him, how do you get yourself in the mix, he's just going to say, he's not going to mention knockout. Because that's not in his character. That's not in his personality. He'll mention.
But would you tell him that?
Keep doing what I'm doing. Just get this win. Move on to the next one. But that's not really how he's going to get the A-side fighters. He needs a knockout. As a guy that didn't get knockouts, myself, I went for him later in my career. I needed to be more exciting to get the bigger fights. And I think that's what I did. Even if I didn't get the knockouts, I did get knockdowns. And I was getting knocked down too. So I was becoming a more fan-friendly fighter, which gave me the opportunities to fight on HBO undercards and ultimately get the Daniel Jacobs fight. So I think Andre needs to do the exact same thing. Now, he's being promoted by Eddie Hearn and DAZN. Perfectly. I mean, he's in commercials. He's being active, and for a champion to stay active, that's the most important thing, and get paid too. Andre's probably making the most money he's made in his career, deservedly. But he needs that knockout win. He really needs to leave the arena with fans wanting to take pictures of him, wanting his autographs, and you know, the media talking about him. Nothing does that more than a knockout.
If he fights, let's say, four times in 2019 and he gets four knockouts, he'll be in line to fight Canelo or Golovkin in 2020. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Even three knockouts during that stretch, you know, one being a semi-significant one against a top five-ish middleweight, I think that'll put him in the mix. I don't think 2019 is the year we see Demetrius Andrade in a significant fight. One fight I wanted to ask about with Andrade is Danny Jacobs. And Jacobs right now, as we speak, still a network free agent. He is aligned with Eddie Hearn. I think there's hope from Eddie's side that he lines up with DAZN. Andrade and Jacobs are pretty good friends. And they've talked about this, that they don't really have much interest in fighting each other. But if both these guys are middleweight champions, Sergio, should they fight? And if they do fight, would we see a good one?
First, I want to touch on the friend part. I unless they're neighbors or they're close cousins, that friend thing, we can fight over that. I mean, I fought Pedro Angulo in my last fight. I'm very friendly with him. We're friends outside the ring, and we fought each other because we needed each other. Same thing in boxing. I mean, look, Jacobs just fought another stablemate in Derevchenko. So
wasn't really friends with him, though. Like that.
But he was stablemates. Yeah. I mean, they see each other every day. They say hi and bye, and they care about each other's fights. And so they're friendly. Now, if they're friends, depends how close friends are they. I mean, did they grow up together, or were they just hi and bye friends? And regardless, put money in front of them. We're fighters. That's what we're fighting. We're prize fighters. I mean, for $100, I'll slap your producer right now. You know, so it's money. That's what we do. We want to go up there. We want to make our money. And then afterwards, we can change. Sorry about that. We can afterwards.
You can't see this on the podcast, but I think I do have $100 here. So throw that. You know, Sean Cherry, our producer here, is going to get a beating from Sergio.
This is what we do. I mean, we could spar and beat up sparring partners for free. I mean, why can't we do it for 6-7 figures, even if we're friendly? I don't think they're friends. And if they are friends, so what? Put it to the side to make a lot of money and build your legacy and feed your family. We're workers. We're prize fighters, and we fight for a prize.
I remember when – this was right around the time when Floyd Mayweather fought Oscar De La Hoya. At that point, he was still a B-side type of guy and was more accessible. So he came up to the Sports Illustrated office. This was after I had sparred a few rounds with Juan Manuel Marquez, wrote a story about it. There was a whole video out there of it. It was an interesting experience. So Floyd heard about it, and he goes to me in the elevator. He goes, "How'd that go?" I go, "Oh, you know, it was all right. I obviously didn't have any chance to beat him." He goes, "Did you get paid for it?" I go, "No." He goes, "Okay, I'll take you out in the corner and fuck you up for free."
There you go. So, spoken like a fighter. So that's beautiful. That's something I would say.
Yeah.
But it's true, though. That's 100% true. And look at how great of a, well, I don't know if great of a businessman, but he definitely makes a lot of money in the right decisions. And whether that's all Mayweather or it's influenced by Al Haymon and others, I mean, he's still doing what every fighter dreams of, and that's making FU money and still being talked about at 42 years old.
Yeah. All right, let me finish with the fight that was announced this week. Amir Khan is going to challenge Terrence Crawford for his WBO welterweight title on April 20th. Khan is a big name. It's unclear if he's still a top-tier welterweight. He's had a couple of comeback fights over the last 2 years, or last year, really. His last fight against Samuel Vargas, he was knocked down in the early rounds. He wound up winning a lopsided decision there against Vargas, but it's widely perceived, and we talked about Broner being a massive underdog against Pacquiao. You can say most people think that Khan is as big or bigger an underdog against Terrence Crawford. What kind of shot do you give Amir Khan in a fight like this?
Amir Khan will give anyone and anything that weighs under 160 pounds problems for six rounds, but in a championship fight, for 12, like he did with Canelo. I mean, he gave Canelo, if not, I had him winning.
That was a close fight.
I had him winning the six rounds before he got knocked out. So Amir Khan has that kind of speed, that kind of explosiveness that's so difficult to time. And that's why he was so successful as a Olympian, a silver medalist. And that's why he's become the multi-champion that he is now. And that's why he still demands these huge paydays in fights, even though he's not as active as he should. Amir Khan's just that special. He's built special. He has a special body frame for that kind of speed, and he must have power because he gets knockdowns and knockouts as well. So you have to respect that. It's a very dangerous fight. I just think he should have fought Kell Brooks. I think that fight would have made more sense. Crawford is arguably the best fighter in the world, along with Lomachenko, but not just in boxing terms, in fighting terms. He's a dog. Crawford is a dog, and he's proud of that. He has a mean streak about him. He wants to hurt you. You know, Lomachenko's happy just dancing around you and confusing your ass with speed, but he doesn't want to hurt you. Crawford is he has bad intentions. So for Khan, who's been knocked out brutally before,
A couple times, yes.
To go in there against one of the best fighters in the world right now who has that mean streak, it's just a dangerous fight for Khan. But you got to give it to Khan. For every critic out there that says fighters aren't fighting the best, well, shit, Amir Khan is always fighting the best. And you got to give it to him. But this is a very, very dangerous fight that I'm not sure he wins.
I'm not sure why he didn't take the Kell Brook fight first, because I think he'd be a favorite in a fight against Kell Brook, especially if Kell had to squeeze himself back down to 147 pounds, which he's not as comfortable at as fighting at 154. But Khan, for whatever reason, he firmly believes that even if he gets stopped by Terrence Crawford, that Kell Brook fight is still going to be there, that the UK fans will still want that. Now, they may want it on some level, but at some point, Sergio, it becomes more of a morbid curiosity and a sideshow that it is a significant fight. And if Khan gets stopped by Crawford, like most people expect he will, I don't know that the interest for a Kell Brook showdown is going to be anywhere near what it is right now.
There's not going to be no interest. It takes the allure away from it, the what if, the magic, and especially gets knocked out. And the thing about Khan is he gets knocked out. It's not like he gets stopped on his feet or the referee stops it or he had an injury or the corner. No, he gets knocked out decisively. And Crawford, man, he's just a beast. So it's just the wrong pick. But I know why he's doing it, because that's the most amount of money being offered for a fight. And Amir Khan goes wherever the biggest offers are. He's not about winning titles in different divisions like an Adrian Broner who has four titles in four different divisions. You know, Khan's more of the, you know, I want $4 million instead of four divisions. So he just goes where the money is, and that's exactly why he's fighting Crawford.
Well, Khan saved Top Rank's backside on this one because they were about to set him up against, set Crawford up with Luis Collazo. Like, who in the world wants to see Terrence Crawford against Luis Collazo?
And Top Rank put that top money to effect, and that's the reason they got a name, because, you know, whether you like Amir Khan or not, he is a name, and he's a worldwide name, and he's another exciting fighter. Like Broner, win or lose, you're going to get entertained and your money's worth in an Amir Khan fight. He's that talented and that vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Top Rank still has a long-term problem with finding opponents for Terrence Crawford. I mean, their plan internally is to keep grooming guys that they have into real opponents, but that's not going to work because we all know who the top opponents are, and they're all across the street. Now, I wrote about this on Monday over at SI.com, Sergio. I wrote about kind of the need, I think, for fighters to take more control of their careers. Too often, in my opinion, when big fights fall apart, we blame Al Heyman and Bob Arum. We blame ESPN, Showtime, HBO, and DAZN. Fighters tend to skate in all this. And I wonder why. Why is it that fighters are looked at like employees of their promoter and not the reverse? I mean, do you think that fighters are employees? Like, are you were advised by Al Heyman. Are you an employee of Al Heyman? Is Terrence Crawford an employee of
no.
Bob Arum?
No, because Al Heyman respects our no. Whenever he never challenges the no, like, no, I'm not interested in that fight. He moves on and brings you another fight, or he'll maybe offer you more money, but he'll respect the no, and he'll never try to urge you to take a fight. Case in point, when I got offered $1 million, or close to $1 million, it was like $900,000, to fight Jermaine Taylor when he was the undisputed middleweight champion, I said no. Al Heyman and my trainer had a long discussion, respectfully, and he goes, no, fight's off the table now. And he never came back to it. Now, yes, we're our masters of our destiny. We have the ultimate say. I could have had that fight. Amir Khan could have had any fight he wants. Any fighter out there has the ultimate decision, the yes and the no. We're not bound to Al Heyman. We're not bound to Bob Arum. It's basically our say, and they're going to back up our say. But we respect what they say. I mean, we're not Harvard graduates, for God's sake. I mean, we want to make the most money possible. But guess who is Harvard graduates? Heyman and Bob Arum. So we're gonna respect someone that's been in that business that can offer us the most amount of money and extend our career to make the most amount of money instead of just, you know, reacting off of balls and heart as a fighter. I'll take that fight. Yeah, that's what the fans want. And ultimately, that's what we can do as fighters. But we also, the more money we start making, the more we think we're businessmen. And we're going to start listening to businessmen. And that's what happens.
All right, a couple things that you said there are interesting. And look, you're right. I mean, Arum's been in the business for decades. Heyman has a track record that's proven to be very beneficial to fighters. What I would say to that is, if you're a fighter and you take that approach, you can't complain when you get criticized. You can't.
No,
because
this
is, because if you're saying the business is more important than anything else, then if you get lambasted by idiot columnists like me, you got to take it. That kind of comes with the territory. You have to absorb that. But I wonder, you know, if Terrence Crawford says to Bob Arum, says, look, I don't care if you've got a nasty relationship with Al Heyman. Go sit in a room. Make it happen. Keith Thurman told me this, and take it for what it's worth. But I asked Keith Thurman this question recently, and I said to Keith, like, you know, what if it comes down to it? You are the man over on this side of the street. Crawford's the man over that side of the street. What happens? He goes, I would tell Al Heyman to sit in a room with Bob Arum and figure it out. ESPN, Showtime, Fox, whatever, figure it out. I don't see a lot of that from fighters, you know, telling their management team to go figure it out. They just seem to kind of go along with it. Now, I believe that Errol Spence wants to fight Terrence Crawford. I firmly believe that. You've seen some of the back and forth they've had. I believe Errol Spence believes with all his heart that he's better than Terrence Crawford. Just like I believe Crawford believes with all his heart, I think he might be right, that he's better than Errol Spence. I don't know why Errol Spence, after he beats Mikey Garcia, wouldn't say to, you know, Al, it's time. Go pretend it's Mayweather Pacquiao. Sit in a room with Bob, find an intermediary, make that happen. I just don't know why there's not more of a push from the fighters to get past all the drama and the red tape that exists in boxing.
First of all, Mannix, don't be using words like juxtapose and lambasted with a fighter because it just confuses me.
That's all right. I'm going to give you a list of synonyms for it.
But look, whenever you get taken under the wing of a giant, you respect what they say. And even though sometimes you might want to, go against that and say, I want this nowadays, it's hard to do that when you grew up with nothing, then all of a sudden you have something. You know, you feel like you're bound to loyalty there, not only to your promoter or your manager, but your family and the people that have been with you when you had nothing. So you think if you went from 0 to 60 and you have that, you're making that much money, you want to continue doing that. I mean, ultimately, you get to a point where legacy is more important than your bank account, of course, and that's where guys like Crawford and Spence are and everyone else. But as a fighter, you want to think about longevity. You want to think about money. How many exciting fighters out there are not around anymore? You know, James Kirkland, you know, that's the first one that comes to mind out there. He left so much money on the table trying to be a tough guy and trying to knock out everyone's block off. He was an HBO darling. Where is he? Where is he, and how much money does he have left, and what became of his career? What could have happened with his career? So I think
let me push back on Kirkland for a second, because he didn't take
Look, I don't want to bring up James Kirkland, but that's the first one that came to mind.
His issue was not taking his career seriously. He would disappear for months at a time and not train in the proper way. He bounced back and forth between Ann Wolf and other trainers.
After the loss, though.
I'm with you, but I'm not sure how talented James Kirkland was to begin with. His biggest win was like Joel Julio.
Okay, bad example, but there's many. It's the point that I was trying to make. It's you're secured and comfortable with the people that brought you that position, and if you're making that amount of money, then you want to continue making that amount of money. You don't want to take a risk just for. I hate to say this because it sounds so awful, but you don't want to take a risk for legacy when you have very comfortable living. You know, I just think that legacy is, we're not in the 40s and 50s and 80s. Well, not the 80s, because, you know, in the 80s they made a lot of millions and millions of dollars, but we're not in that era where the hunger means more than the hunger of beating somebody great is more than the money. Now it's about money, man. It really is. And I hate saying that because that, you know, fans and the public hate to hear that, but it is about the money. It's about who am I going to get the most amount of money to beat.
The example, though, that flies in the face of that argument to me is Miguel Cotto. Because Miguel Cotto, at 32 years old, finished his contract with Top Rank and said, you know what, I'm going to bounce around a little bit. He left Top Rank. He went to Golden Boy, where he fought Floyd Mayweather. He came back to Top Rank for some significant fights. Then he went back to Golden Boy for some significant fights. Then he signed with Roc Nation, which gave him that absurd 3-fight, $50 million deal. So when a fighter seizes his control, when a fighter is popular, right, and Cotto was a popular guy, he could draw a huge crowd at MSG, he did big ratings on HBO, he knew he had some leverage. But there are a number of popular guys. Terrence Crawford could exert that type of leverage. Errol Spence, not maybe on the same level, but to a degree. Same thing with Spence, same thing with Keith Thurman. I don't know why more of these guys don't maintain maximum flexibility to bounce back and forth between promoters for the biggest fights.
Crawford is not Cotto. I mean, you mentioned Miguel Cotto, and I think he sucked out the magic of Miguel Cotto and that Puerto Rican fan base as much as he could.
Brilliantly.
Yes, he did. And I don't think Crawford outside of Nebraska can do that, not yet at least. Errol Spence, I don't think he can do that outside of Texas. So these guys aren't the superstars that Cotto was. And the reason that Cotto was so popular because he had that fan base. And I don't think outside of their home states, I don't think Crawford and Spence and guys like these have that kind of fan base. And that's probably because they're not fighting the fights that a guy like Miguel Cotto was, but these are rarities, Chris. You know, these are rare fighters. These are great fighters that take challenges. Manny Pacquiao's like that, as he's, you know, proving. He'll fight whoever. Amir Khan's that way. But it's just whenever you're thinking about money, about business, longevity, those tough fights, you want to maximize those tough fights. So you want to get paid the most amount of money. And it's frustrating for a fan. But as a fighter, I understand it.
Sergio, always appreciate the time, man. We will see you Friday on DAZN. Demetrius Andrade, Artur Akhavov. Sergio, by the way, leaves like the heavy criticism to me. I do the...
I can
be the hatchet man of
these
broadcasts.
Yes, you can. especially with the... What's the guy that wants to beat my butt after the fights are done?
Oh, Anthony Sims.
Yeah, Anthony Sims. There you go. Every time I criticize Anthony Sims, he gets upset and wants to fight me after the fight. So I said, look, did you hear what Chris Mannix is saying about you? Go whoop his ass.
I did have some. Well, that was Anthony Sims didn't fight anybody of consequence that last time.
Nope.
Sergio, always appreciate it, man. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, he's one of the best fighters of all time, future Hall of Famer, fighting January 19th in Las Vegas against Adrian Broner, Manny Pacquiao, and he's back in the United States at the Wild Card Boxing Club. How does it feel being back, you know, at Wild Card, Manny?
It's good to be back here in Wild Card and to fight again in Las Vegas. I'm so happy.
After the Jeff Horn fight, did you ever think that you'd be back here, you know, training with Freddie, you know, being part of all this again?
Oh yeah, that's our plan. We never pretty out of the Team Pacquiao. He's always there. It just happened that the last fight that we have in and Matisse, Boboy want to be the head trainer to experience being a head trainer.
So a lot of people have wondered here, you know, what happened between you and Freddie. And Freddie's talked a lot over the years about kind of being hurt by everything that happened and wondering why you didn't call him. Why did it take so long for you two to reconnect, you know, physically or over the phone?
Okay, so I was busy in the Philippines and with my work in the office and then training, so I don't have time to talk to Freddie. That's what happened.
Freddie was telling me about the meeting you guys had at the hotel, you know, a month or so back, about, you know, kind of burying the hatchet with the two of you. What was it like to see him, you know, after not seeing him for over a year?
To work again. When I saw him, I told him that I want to get you for this fight and work with us. Like,
do you consider Freddie back as part of kind of Team Pacquiao, not just for this fight, but for however many fights you have?
Yeah, we consider as I consider him as a Team Pacquiao.
So being back in camp like this, some things have changed. Of course, some things stay the same. How has everybody been getting along in this camp?
Doing good. The team is coordinating each other and then talking each other what we're gonna do by daily training. So nothing to worry about.
Is anything different in this camp than in other camps you've been a part of with Freddie?
The routine is the same, but we have a couple of adjustments about the recovery of the body. We need to rest. That if I cannot recover the day heavy training and then the next day, if I cannot recover, then rest. We don't push our body to work hard.
For a lot of years, Freddie has been in charge of your career. Buboy did a great job in the last round against Lucas Matisse. You won that fight by knockout. Who is in charge of this camp?
Both of them are in charge. They can give advice and strategy. They're talking each other, so it's better to have more than one than one.
Does it matter to you on fight night who is in the ring in the middle during the fight?
It doesn't matter.
Just because you get advice from both of them, why doesn't it matter?
It doesn't matter because they're understanding each other and then they talk each other, so nothing to worry.
About 10 years ago now, Manny, your career really took off. You had beaten Oscar De La Hoya. You were about to go on to wins over Miguel Cotto and other big fights to become a real superstar. Back then, did you think you'd still be fighting, you know, 10 years later at age 40?
I never think about that. I cannot imagine that at the age of 40 I still here and keep on fighting, and really thankful to God for giving me this good health and strength. I mean, not all the boxers can fight in at the age of 40, so this is blessings.
So if I had told that Manny Pacquiao, the one that beat Oscar De La Hoya, that you'd still be fighting at 40, what would that version of you have said?
If that, what is that?
Well, if you know, back then, if I had told you then that you'd still be fighting at 40, what would you have said?
I can say we don't know. We don't know yet. Yes, because it's hard to say advance that we don't know.
How do you feel now physically compared to the fighter you were maybe not even 10 years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago? How do you feel?
I feel the same. The intensity of training, the hungerness to work hard. I don't feel get lazy. In fact, I always I'm very excited to doing my job in training, preparing for this fight. Happy doing preparation. Still the same.
You enjoy training?
Yeah, I enjoy training.
You're a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the great fighters of all time. You're in a dangerous sport, and you're fighting at 40 years old. Some people have wondered why you're still fighting. What keeps you coming back for more in boxing?
That's the evidence of being passionate of this sport. Back then, I said boxing is my passion, and that's why I'm still here. I keep on fighting. And like I said, I'm always thankful to God for giving me this good health and strength.
Do you check your health frequently to make sure that everything is kind of right, or you just go by how you feel?
Oh yeah. I have a regular checkup. I have my own doctor in the Philippines, and to make sure that nothing to worry about, and you know.
It gets written a lot in the U.S. that, you know, maybe Manny Pacquiao is fighting because he needs the money, and he has to keep fighting because he needs the money. How would you respond to that?
Well, I'm so blessed by God to have this money, and I just want to fight. I just want to fight, and I'm really thankful to God for these blessings. More than I ask from God.
So if you retired right now, would you be okay with money for the rest of your life?
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
You could have stayed with...
I invest my money to a lot of properties like that.
Last year, you could have stayed with Top Rank, with Bob Arum, the guys that have worked with you your entire career. You decided to change, to come to the PBC, to work with Al Haymon, to take your career in a different direction. Why did you decide to do that?
It's because I want to have a chance my fighters to fight here in America. I think this is a great opportunity, not only for myself, but for the fighters that I have right now. I have more than almost 50 fighters in the Philippines. This is a great opportunity for them.
So does this deal with Al, that gives them more of an opportunity than they would have had if you had stayed with Top Rank?
Well, I believe that because they have a show, the PBC has a show, boxing match, so we have a slot, at least 48 fights a year.
How does your political career fit into all this now? How do you feel about a future in politics today, as far as moving forward?
My politics career is I'm doing my job as a senator, and whatever task God give it to me, then I will do the works.
Do you still have political goals? Do you want to be president someday? Do you want?
I don't have. I'm not thinking about that right now. But if that what guns God wants me to be, then I will shoulder that responsibility to serve the people.
You said that you signed over with PBC to help out some of your young fighters. A lot of people here think that you signed with PBC because you want another crack at Floyd Mayweather. How much did that, how much, if anything, did that have to do with your decision?
My purpose signing PBC is to have a chance my fighters to fight here in America.
So it had nothing to do with Floyd Mayweather?
Nothing to do with Floyd Mayweather.
Do you think about that fight 3 years ago often?
Well, before, when he was not retired, I want a rematch because I don't believe that I lost the fight.
Do you really believe he's retired?
That's what he said. I mean,
did you watch his last exhibition?
Oh yeah, yeah.
What did you think?
I think it's my first time to say to see the exhibition that you came to the to your opponent and knock him out. I thought what I thought in an exhibition bout is just to show off, entertain the fans, like nothing serious like that.
Did you know he was going to be at the Clippers game?
I didn't expect that. I was invited to watch the Clippers game for Filipino Heritage Night. And then when I'm sitting in the front row, somebody told me that Floyd is here. So,
and everybody has written after that, that was exactly how the last fight between you two was kind of pushed forward, the Miami Heat game. Did it bring back any memories of that?
Oh, yeah. But I'm not thinking about that fight. I'm thinking about this January 19th against Adrian Broner, because I don't want to take him lightly and underestimate Adrian Broner.
Would you have fought anybody in your first fight back in the United States? And when Broner's name was brought up to you, what was your reaction?
Well, I believe that he can give a good fight, bring the action in the ring, more action in the ring.
Do you think he's going to bring the fight to you? He's been a counterpuncher for most of his career. Do you think he's going to try to come to you?
It's good for me. It's good for me to fight a counterpuncher, because just a few opponents that I have fought a counterpuncher boxer.
Last question for you. You know, it feels like it was 5-10 years ago when Bob Arum was saying, man, he's going to fight three more times and he's going to retire. Then a few years later, it'd be 3 or 4 more times and then he's going to retire. What are your goals still in boxing? Is there something you still want to accomplish in the sport before you get out of it?
Right now, if you ask me retirement, I don't know yet. I can still fight. My feeling right now is I can still fight 2 to 3 more years.
What does your family say about that?
They're okay. They're agree with me, and they know that I told them I'm often ask my doctor and go to the hospital to for a general checkup every month or other month, then to make sure that nothing to worry about.
And you think you found a balance between working in politics and training at this point in your life?
Yes. We manage our time. We don't mix up the boxing and serving the people.
Is it any easier now that you know what goes into being a politician in the Philippines?
Oh, yeah. Serving the people is my mission. It's sad to say, but of my what I learned and discovered in politics, what I learned and know the problems of the Philippines, so sad, but we will fix it.
What's the biggest problem you want to address?
Poverty and economically, and also corruption.
How do you do that? Maybe that's a long answer to it.
Well, I have a very important solution for that, but I will not explain it to you because it's very going to be long. But I have an idea to solve those problems. But it will take time, at least minimum of 10 years to 15 years.
And you're still motivated to do that? It still excites you to be a part of that process?
Yes, because if not me, who? Who will do that? I mean, we've been hearing a lot of politicians to solve the problems, but nothing's happened. When they get there, they are corrupted by the politics system.
Manny, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.